Okay, welcome to the regularly scheduled meeting of the Morro Bay Planning Commission. Today is Tuesday, April 2nd, 2019, and we're at the Veterans Memorial Building on 209 Surf Street in Morro Bay. We have a full complement here, so we have a quorum, so I will call the meeting to order. Could we please observe a moment of silence? All right, thank you very much. Please stand, face the flag, and begin the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you very much. Do we have any planning commissioner announcements? Okay.
Just one real quick thing.
Okay, great.
I saw an article in one of the local magazines that I wanted to compliment the Inn at Morro Bay for their massive photovoltaic project.
Great, great. And then also that project that we approved for the mobile home park there on south of South Bay, I see that's going in too. So... Okay, at this point, we'll open the meeting for public comment. This is the time that's dedicated for items that are not on the agenda. If you have something you'd like to say, please come forward. We normally offer about 3 minutes.
Good afternoon or good evening. Bill Martini, Morro Bay. Probably for the last year or so, I've been speaking out on the zoning on South Main Street on the land side and also in the bay itself. And I wasn't sure if, and also a couple maps that are incorrect that I had wanted to see if we could get them corrected. I believe it was at the last city council meeting or maybe two back that Scott mentioned that the zoning in the bay is going to be changed and is going to be upzoned. And I thought I wanted to check with the actual Planning Commission if that's a recommendation to City Council or to the Coastal. And what it is currently, and I know I've repeated this several times in the past, there's an overlay in that area called Special Planning Area B. This overlay also covers the zoning in the bay, and it states the zoning is mixed-use harbor. Not just harbor, but mixed-use. And that eliminates industrial ships and heavy commercial in the back area of the bay from the boat launch south. By eliminating Special Planning Area B, that will actually upzone that area of the water in the bay for harbor zone. And I know in the past we've had 3 and 4 story tall ships. It's deep water. You can bring ocean going ships right into that part of the bay. Back in 1964, that part of the bay was zoned down. In fact, there was a tug operation by the Inn at Morro Bay that was made to move north because it was turning into residential. It was also a very sensitive area of the bay as far as habitat and that. So I just wasn't sure if indeed this is the Planning Commission's recommendation to upzone that back part of the bay, if this has gone to the coastal staff yet. And also, there's a couple of maps. One actually shows the land side in R1 zoning and waterfront commercial zoning. And the old maps, which were correct, show about a 10% strip along the waterfront and a 90% strip that is R1 zone. So waterfront commercial and about 10%, 90% the other. The current map that I haven't seen changed yet is showing about 2/3 waterfront commercial and 1/3 residential. It's incorrect. I'm not saying that verbally it doesn't state that, but the map doesn't indicate that, and it can be very deceiving. And I just wanted to see if that is going to be corrected. You have Esha maps that you have corrected. There's other maps that you're redoing. And if it's not corrected, then it will be be misinformation. So I just love questions. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have anybody else wish to speak on an item not on the agenda?
Always love to speak. Betty Winholtz, since you have been left out of the process, you being the Planning Commission, for having a public hearing on our wastewater treatment plant, or WRF, whether or not you're for or against that project, it seems to me that you would be for a fair due process. And at the last city council meeting, Mr. Livick indicated that they would like to have our one and only public hearing down in Oxnard in May. Rather, here in July, we are having a Coastal Commission meeting at the Embassy Suites. So if you have any influence or any way of talking to people on the council and encouraging them to do the fair thing and have the hearing in July in San Luis rather than in Oxnard in May, I think that would be a fair thing for the public to be able to participate, since we will have no hearing here in the city. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Okay. Gone. All right. We'll close public comment period. Scott, do you wish to respond to any of the public comment?
I think we've talked several times about Mr. Martini's issues, and I think we've indicated that we will be revising the maps to reflect the appropriate zoning and the appropriate location. Part of the waterfront zoning extends over some of the slips that are out there, and that's not where it's supposed to be. We confirmed that. The Special Area B language has been removed. The Planning Commission has seen that. The Coastal Commission Coastal Commission currently has the city's public draft of the zoning code under review. We haven't gotten comments back on that yet, though. As far as the wastewater treatment plant processing, the city's requested a consolidated permitting process, meaning as opposed to getting separate coastal development permits from the county and the city and the Coastal Commission, because it would require all three, we've agreed to a consolidated permitting process, which would take the permitting through Coastal Commission. So the CDP will be issued directly by them, and it, as Ms. Winholtz indicated, it's looking like it'll be the May meeting, which would be in Oxnard. So that's what she was referring to.
Okay, great.
Can I just verify? I think it was stated that we hadn't seen it. We actually had a hearing, on the EIR. Mm-hmm. So we did thoroughly review the EIR.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Scott.
Mm-hmm. We haven't seen any design development drawings or anything like that, but I don't think they've been produced yet, have they?
So they're in that process, but the coastal development permit is going to be issued by the Coastal Commission through the consolidated permitting process, as opposed to hearings with three separate bodies, meaning the Coastal Commission, that county, because it's located in the county currently, the land where we're supposed to place it. Oops.
Okay, you're done.
I'm out of time. Sorry, being too long-winded. So we have the different the county and the city agreeing to go through the consolidated permitting process. The county and the city and the Coastal Commission. So it's one shot as opposed to hearings and appeals and hearings and appeals and hearings and appeals. Idea, being that that's a time-consuming process to go through all of those types of things, and the longer it takes, the more expensive the project becomes. So that was the thought process, I think, behind the consolidated permitting process.
But as to why it's being held in Oxnard, is that purely the convenience of the Coastal Commission? Strikes me that, given where the plant's going to be located,
that's where their May meeting's being held.
And it's just a timing issue.
Correct.
Okay. All right, any other comments or questions or observations? Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for public comment. Scott, thanks for the reply. Next item is presentations. We have none. Next is the consent calendar. We have three items on the consent calendar. Does anybody wish to pull any of the items or have discussion on any of the items? Okay, do we have a motion then?
Chair, I'll move that we accept the consent calendar.
I'll second.
We have a motion is a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, seeing none, motion passes. Next item up is public hearings. This is B1. Case number, it's appeal of CDP 18-009. Site location 461 Fairview Avenue in Morro Bay. So this is an appeal to a to an approval. So Willow, do we have a staff report? Are you ready?
Yes, it's getting pulled up right now.
Okay.
Yeah, I do. Okay.
Okay, well, while you're getting ready, do we have any ex parte communications?
I did. I met with Ms. Best yesterday at this project site.
I had several emails from Ms. Best, but was not able to meet with her.
Okay. All right. Thank you, guys.
Okay. Good evening, commissioners and residents of Morro Bay. I'd like to start by making a correction to my staff report in the concluding paragraph on page 15. I refer to Coastal Development Permit number CPO 448 and resolution number 1115, where the correct numbers are CDP 18009 and resolution number 0519, respectively. So with that said, this item is an appeal of Administrative Coastal Development Permit CDP 18-009 for the demolition and reconstruction of a single-family residence at 461 Fairview. The appellant is Nancy Bast, who lives across the street to the east from the applicants Chris and Jill Stavros. I want to take a moment to clarify the appeal process for those who may not be familiar. The city's certified local coastal plan gives the director authority to process certain types of permits administratively. This project, which is the demolition and reconstruction of a single-family residence in a single-family neighborhood, is included in those types of permits that are processed administratively. CDP 18-009 was conditionally approved on January 31st, 2019. The public had opportunities to make comments, speak with staff, and eventually appealed the project on February 8th, 2019. At this stage, the Planning Commission can uphold or deny the appeal, remand the project back to staff for further review, or continue the project to a date certain and provide direction to the applicant and staff. Moving on, the project is specifically the demolition of an existing 922-square-foot single-story residence and construction of a new 2,203-square-foot home with a 432-square-foot garage and 432 square feet of deck space on a 3,968-square-foot lot at 461 Fairview. The project is located in an R1 zone surrounded by R1 on all sides, sitting south of Carmel Street, north of Ridgeway, and east of Kings Avenue. This is a view of the existing single-family residence and current sites as seen from the street, and it is important to note that the large tree in front was removed last year in 2018. The project is consistent with the requirements set forth in the municipal code, meeting or exceeding all of the development standards. This is an image of the existing site plan juxtaposed with the proposed, and as you can see, the new structure occupies a similar shape to the old, just utilizing more of the uniquely shaped lot while still meeting lot coverage requirements. These are images of the home as seen from the street and from the back of the house, the east and the west. Sorry. And these are the images of the home as seen from the north and the south, which is downhill, or the north side of the property, which is downhill, and the south side of the property, which is uphill from the project. This is a visual rendering of the project with regards to the neighboring properties provided by the architect. The other single-family homes in the immediate neighborhood range in size from roughly 700 square feet to 3,000 square feet. The appellant submitted four attachments with their appeal, two of which had 12 specific items that the staff provided responses for in the staff report, and two other items which were correspondence between the applicant and the appellant. The 12 appeal issues were addressed in much greater detail in the staff report, but I will be summarizing each of the points in the following slides. So, number one, the permit must be supported by a finding that the project is consistent with the Morro Bay Local Coastal Program, and no such finding exists in the permit issued. And staff's response is The project was found to be consistent with the city's local coastal plan, general plan, and zoning code. Staff made edits to the Planning Commission resolution number 0519 that include several findings related to the consistency or related to consistency with applicable city documents. Appeal issue number two, that the proposed project is not consistent with the coastal land use plan policy 12.06 because there was no consideration of height and bulk in relation to the character of the surrounding area. And staff's response was that the proposed project is located in the Morrow Heights neighborhood in Area 7 of the certified LCP. And staff found that the height, bulk, scale, and design of the home to be visually consistent with the properties in the neighboring area. Appeal issue number three, that the project violates policy 9.02 of the city's section 10 coastal land use plan because it does not ensure that it shall not create nor contribute to erosion or geologic instability. And staff's response is that the project is located in an area of the city that has been identified as an area of potential ground shaking and that the project is required to meet California building code requirements. And that the integrity of the retaining wall on the northern property border is required to be evaluated as one of the conditions of approval for this project. Appeal issues four and five. The City of Morro Bay is subject to the Coastal Act, and the director cannot issue administrative permits. These appeal items were grouped together due to their similarities, and staff's response is that the city's certified local coastal program was adopted in 1982, which makes the standard of review for demolition and reconstruction of single-family residences in single-family zones the local coastal program and not the Coastal Act. Appeal issue number six, that the project was noticed improperly and that the public was not given adequate time to respond to the project. And staff response was that the project was noticed in a manner consistent with the requirements set forth in the Morro Bay Municipal Code, section 17.58.040, subsection C. Noticing cards were sent in the mail to all owners and occupants within 500 feet, and a standard 18 by 24 inch yellow noticing board was visibly placed in the front yard. And I have an image of it there. Staff also met with members of the public multiple times during the public comment period. Appeal issue number seven, that the administrative process does not consider the surrounding neighborhood in the process. Staff's response is that the project was noticed on January 15th, 2019. The public was given 10 days to submit comments and concerns about the project. During that time, staff was available to answer questions about the project or to go over plans with members of the public. After 10 days, staff found that the project was consistent with the regulations and policies set forth in the city's land use documents. The permit was then issued on January 31st, and the appeal was filed 9 days later on February 8th. Number eight, that the project does not meet the requirements of the coastal land use plan and the general plan. And staff's response is that the project went through multiple rounds of corrections to ensure it was consistent with the policies set forth in the city's general plan, the local coastal plan, and residential design guidelines. Number nine, that the project does not meet the standards of the residential design guidelines with regards to neighborhood compatibility and privacy. And staff's response is that the project was found to be consistent with these policies set forth in the city's land use documents and that the design is modest and uses various techniques directly from the city's residential design guidelines in order to lessen the impact of the second story from the street view. Number 10, that the project obstructs visibility and is very similar to a project that was appealed at 1000 Ridgeway. And staff's response is that the project is consistent with the city's land use documents. Morro Bay Municipal Code also requires two covered and enclosed parking spaces, which alleviate some of the off-street parking in that area. Public Works also had the opportunity to review the projects for compliance with city standards prior to issuance of the coastal development permit. Additionally, 1000 Ridgeway was a 5,000 square foot proposed home, which is more than twice the size of the proposed project at 461 Fairview and was surrounded by mostly homes under 2,000 square feet. Number 11, that the project does not protect visual resources. And staff's response is that protecting private views is not a review criteria found in the city's land use documents and that the bulk, scale, and overall design of the home were found to be visually compatible with the surrounding neighborhood. And lastly, appeal issue number 12, that the project requires a soils report to ensure stability, and staff's response is that the project is required to meet California Building Code, and a soils report is required prior to issuance of a building permit as one of the conditions of approval for this project. Lastly, next, I want to go over the residential design guidelines and that the project was found to be consistent with them with regards to relationship with existing homes, as there are homes of varying sizes and architectural styles in the surrounding neighborhood, scale and mass, as the design is modest and uses a sloped roof, varying textures, and incorporation of the second story into the design in order to minimize the impact of the home from the street view. Surface articulation, as the design is balanced and staff worked closely with the architect to incorporate decking on the second story in order to minimize the blank wall space that provides architectural relief to the overall design. Building orientation, as the front door is visible from the street. Garage and driveway design, as the garage door uses visually interesting materials and fits well with the overall design. Building materials, as the variation provides for visual interest. And architectural elements, as they are balanced and proportionate with the overall design of the home. This item was noticed as required in the San Luis Obispo Tribune newspaper on the 22nd of March, and the property owners and occupants within 500 feet were duly noticed and invited to attend tonight's meeting. Therefore, it is staff's recommendation that the Planning Commission deny the appeal and uphold the director's decision to conditionally approve Administrative Coastal Development Permit CDP 18-009, subject to the findings and conditions of approval outlined in Resolution 0519. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Do we have questions for staff? Joseph?
I wonder, could I see the 3D rendering? This is the first time that I've seen that. Makes it so much easier for me to sort of evaluate something when I can see that, if you could keep it up for a bit.
Yeah.
Okay. The second question, my understanding is that there's 10 days in which to appeal the decision.
Correct.
Does that require that within the 10 days, the entire memorandum supporting the appeal has got to be submitted, or is it simply just a statement that I'm seeking an appeal?
So they're supposed to submit the reasoning behind the appeal. Oftentimes, we'll let them expand upon those, you know, things beyond that 10-day time frame. If they just let us know they're going to appeal.
Okay, because it's a difficult, complicated task to put together a memorandum, and I was thinking, I think anyone would be hard pressed to put it together in 10 days. The final question, and this is again, Scott. I was looking at the proposed residential guideline, the supplemental regulation 17.05.040, which deals with reducing the square footage of a second story for lots that are over 5,000 square feet. That notwithstanding, I have a reason for asking the question, but the fact that this is a smaller lot, but my thought is that the current design doesn't meet those requirements of the proposed guidelines. I realize it's only a proposal, but am I correct in that?
So the policy you're referring to is in the draft development standards associated with the draft zoning code. And it talks about setting back the second story, I think, 3 feet from the front for 60% of the frontage. The point there is to provide articulation. It is a draft policy, so not in place and not applicable to this project. Also, I would note that, you know, that policy also allows you to meet articulation requirements in different ways. And this project probably doesn't have 60%. It's probably more like 25% of it does that. But it has horizontal articulation. The front of the building moves in like this. The entryway is set back. You have the second floor on the area to the left steps back as well. So it provides articulation in a different manner than maybe was prescribed by that specific policy. But does the intent behind that is articulation across the building front. This project does that. Whether you like the way they did it or not is another question, but it does provide the articulation that's desired by that policy.
Okay, and I want to underscore that I clearly understand that this is a proposal and has not been adopted by the city yet.
Jesse, any questions?
I have two questions. not that it really matters, but the 6'9" rear setback, is that a percentage of the dimensions? Is that why we get an odd number like that?
Yes.
Okay. And question number two was, if or did we receive more comments after the 10 days, the 10-day appeal period?
There were two comments, and I gave each of you a copy of them. There was one from,
I think you had one from Jamie Irons and one from Cynthia Holly.
Okay.
Michael.
Yes. Scott, can you tell me, just for everybody's sake, what was the square footage limit that we had previously that would have triggered a hearing on something like this?
2,500 square feet.
So because we separate the net square footage of the house from the garage, this came underneath that as opposed to the gross square footage?
Yes, and that policy no longer exists.
Okay.
Although you might recall in the draft zoning code, we do have a 2,500 foot cutoff for things to go to planning commission, but that would be actual floor area, not including garage, is the way that it's written now. You'll get to see the policy though again.
Yeah.
And weigh in.
And then can you explain when this was executed and made available and how it was made available, the rendering?
The visual rendering?
Yes.
It was submitted early on with one of the submittals.
Okay. But it wasn't in the materials that were in our
package. I did not include it in the staff report,
okay.
No.
But if someone was going to try to understand this project and they looked at the staff report in preparation for this meeting, they wouldn't have seen that.
Correct.
Okay. And is there an explanation for why, given the scope of the project, the rendering still shows the tree?
The architect is in the audience and is going to speak later. You can ask the question of the architect.
Maybe I will. All right. Thank you.
Okay, Susan, you have any questions? Okay, so just to reiterate, there'll be full soils report, including slope stability, geology, and passive solar soil pressures and all that. That's generally required for a building permit?
Yeah, the project's required to comply with the California Building Code. There's also a condition on the project, and there was from the beginning, to have the retaining wall on the north side evaluated for any impacts related to placing the home there.
And were there any green features or higher standard of energy
potential for solar, but it's not
building that they proposed with this project?
I believe there's potential for solar, but
okay.
It's not included with this permit.
Okay. Okay, great. Thank you. Okay. No other questions? I'll open this up for public comment. And at this point, I think we'll have the appellant come forward first and speak. Please state your name.
Good evening, commissioners. I'm Nancy Bast, and for the last 39 years, I've lived at 450 Fairview. Before I comment on this project in particular, I must comment on the process itself. Number one, an administrative permit should never be issued for a project that has such adverse ramifications to neighbors and neighborhoods. The administrative permit process, by the way, I get 10 minutes, is that true?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. The administrative permit should never be issued for a project that has such adverse ramifications to neighbors and neighborhoods. The administrative permit process makes residents pay to participate in their own city government when a project adversely affects the daily quality of their life in their own home. Number two, design guidelines for view shed protection and neighborhood compatibility should be defined in an ordinance, not left to an arbitrary interpretation of policy. Enlarging on these points, number one, the administrative permit process in certain cases is unfair and unjust, and I believe the authority to use it was not intended for such major proposals as demolition of an existing house and construction of an entirely new one. I know of at least three such instances in my area of administrative permits issued when impacted neighbors were required to pay $250 to find out even the basic details of major projects that would impact them and the neighborhood. No doubt there were many more and could not afford the price of an appeal in order to buy a voice in city governance. Adding to the injustice, another $250 must be paid should the appellant wish to appeal the Planning Commission decision to the City Council. It is a fact that myself and the immediate neighborhood did not receive any mailed notification of this proposed project at 461 Fairview. We became aware only when the obscurely placed yard sign was noticed and the word was spread. Staff has said there is no legal requirement for mailed notification in cases of administrative permits, although staff said hundreds of cards were mailed anyway. For the record, just what is the lawful requirement for notification mailings? The yard sign was replaced back in the original location within only the last 10 days after the vegetation that obscured it was removed for the photo in the staff report. I know that an administrative permit is a reasonable method to advance certain kinds of projects without a time-consuming hearing before this body. But demolition and construction of a new house should not be one of them. The commission's last meeting was canceled for lack of items, and my appeal is the only agenda item tonight. That indicates there is not a backlog of projects requiring Planning Commission review to warrant the administrative permit process applied to major proposals that have grave consequences to neighbors. There is also a subtle, intimidating factor to an administrative permit appeal versus a regular CDP hearing process. In an administrative permit appeal hearing, neighbors are reluctant to participate in expressing an opinion as it could be construed as taking sides and thus alienating one neighbor or the other. Whereas at a regular CDP Planning Commission hearing, neighbors feel freer to comment as the process is merely gathering data for consideration before the permit has been awarded. Number two, sometime back about 13 years ago, there was a spate of very large houses being built in Morro Bay that stood out from their neighborhoods, and people were asking why were they being permitted. A small group of concerned residents advertised a privately organized public meeting on a Saturday in the community room of our library to discuss this new mansionization problem. The organizers had researched and found that most coastal California cities had ordinances that considered private view protection and neighborhood appropriateness. Pismo Beach and Morro Bay were the exceptions. The packed meeting of 100 citizens whose solicited comments were written down on a large chart and then rated by importance. It was very clear Morro Bay's citizenry put greatest importance in their viewshed and neighborhood character and that those qualities had monetary value. Out of that meeting grew Morro Bay's policy of design guidelines for neighborhood compatibility, but disappointedly stopped short of an ordinance that mandated consideration of private view protection and house design that fit into the character of the surrounding neighborhood. How much needless stress, animosity, and ill feeling between neighbors has since been created in the absence of a definitive ordinance. View not only is worth a lot of money, it also carries intangibles like quality of life. Right now, on Anchor Street, a 91-year-old woman has lived for four decades with a grand view to the west. However, because of an administrative permit for a partial demolition and construction of a second story, her view is soon to be obliterated. She did not have an opportunity to voice her concerns to this body and possibly affect a modification she and her neighbor could both be comfortable with. The importance of view to quality of life and investment cannot be overemphasized. When I bought my house in 1981 at 450 Fairview, the interest rate was a whopping 12.25% interest. There were other bidders on the house, so I offered 12.5% interest, and I got the house. I already owned a house I loved on a tree-lined block of Estero Avenue. Why would anybody pay 12.5% interest on a house built in 1948 with a 1948 interior when they already had a nice home? The answer is, it has a million-dollar view. My point is that conditions under which an administrative permit is issued must be identified and codified to exclude major proposals such as demolitions and replacement construction. Such instances should always require a CDP, as in the case of my appeal, so there may be a fair discussion in a public hearing without a $250 price tag. Why are the Stavos so adamant about remaining at 461 Fairview? It surely must be the possibility of a million-dollar view. They are going to extreme lengths, financially and physically, to stay at that location. Code requirements could not be satisfied for an addition because the lot is too small to provide covered parking, setbacks, other demands. The only option to remain at that location was to demolish a house on which they had done a beautiful interior remodel just a few years ago. By starting with a vacant lot, they could satisfy all the building requirements. There are important conditions such as the stability of the old 10-foot-high retaining walls that hold that property up and soil testing that must be ascertained, another reason the permit should not have been prematurely issued. They have a view from their house now, but from a second story, the view would be an iconic panoramic view, taking in the harbor, the rock, the coastline to Point Estero, and the hills and mountains east to Cuesta Ridge. But there is a problem. It steals views that already belong to others. It is a very modern design that will stand in sharp contrast to the character of the neighborhood. I ask you to uphold the appeal to deny the administrative permit and process it as a CDP application in a public hearing before this planning commission. Thanks for listening. If I have any time, I don't.
Okay, thank you very much. Can we have the applicant speak next if they wish to?
Version, is that okay to circulate?
Okay, yeah. Do we? Thank you.
Also, if it's possible, I'd like to address two technical issues with the staff report and a discrepancy with the plan before we start the clock. Is that possible? If not, I'll just start talking. But but there is a technical problem with the plan. This height of the structure is misstated from the plans that were submitted. I wanted to answer a question about the tree as well.
Yeah, so. Could you please? Well, state that in your presentation, please.
Okay, very good.
Okay. Do you
have it all to come back? Okay, very good.
Okay, Scott, do we need your slideshow for the public? Excuse me. Shouldn't we have your slideshow up for the public, seeing as we've got documentation? Shouldn't they be able to see it also?
What you have printed is the same as what we're going to look at digitally, and then there's also links that can be visited as well, and I've provided it on USB thumb drive.
Okay, thank you. Just clarification.
Sure.
Okay, whenever you're ready.
Okay, very good. So thank you all very much for your time today. My name is Chris Stavros. This is my wife, Jill, and my son, Nicholas. We actually have twins. Jason's busy working at Morro Bay Golf Course this evening, so he wasn't able to make it. We moved to Morro Bay in 1991. We bought our first house in North Morro Bay in 97, and we were fortunate enough to be able to relocate to our current location in 2003. So we've been there for quite a while. My kids were born in Morro Bay. They're students at Morro Bay High School. We bought our properties, both of them, the one that we originally had and the one that we have now, with a very clear understanding of what the sightline occlusion regulations are from Morro Bay. And I just want to point that out, but I will state that we have been very sensitive to that in the design of this property. So we walked into this property knowing that the houses in front of us could go up, and we bought the property knowing that if we could achieve it someday, that we'd have the opportunity to go up as well. If you stand in my house, it's very small. It's about half the size of this. Rather than making a relative reference, I'll tell you that if you stand in the middle of the room and turn in a circle, you can see every square foot of the house. You can see both bedrooms. My 17-year-old twins sleep in bunk beds in a room that's 7.5 by 12 feet, and our bedroom is just slightly larger than that. We have nowhere to put parents or guests. I'm embarrassed to admit that when my parents or my wife's parents come, that we have to pull out an arrow bed or ask them to stay somewhere else. We have to rent a spare unit just to store things like seasonal items and office documents for the home. And my kids, I'm certain, are going to be with us for a number of years to come. We're packed in. We have no room. We don't have sufficient parking. Right now, we have to park on the street. We'd like to have a garage that was functional. It's particularly congested on our street when some of the vacation rentals around us are occupied. I want to point out that we're not defending an exception or a request to break the rules or go outside the boundaries of what Morro Bay has stated as regulation. We're here defending something that's already been approved. Our house is average size for the U.S. It's built to conform to modern standards, and part of the size is a function of what's been required of us. We started with a design that was actually to expand our current residence, spent several thousand dollars working on that design, and when we brought it to the city, we were informed that it wasn't feasible. We weren't going to be allowed because of the setbacks, and what was required of us to change the plans made it an impractical design. So we ditched it and went greenfield, started from scratch, and our requirements were to meet a design that met our needs and that was considerate of our neighbors. Also, that design has had considerations built in for things that are new that have come about since many of the homes in Morro Bay were constructed. Sprinklers, two-car garage, setbacks. The house that we have today that's planned is actually shorter front to back than our current property, so it's set back further from the street than the current property, and it's also further back from the back of the lot. It occupies about the same footprint as the current house, but it's taller, and that's where part of the objection comes in. We love our neighbors. We're very concerned for them. And we went through many iterations to come up with a design that was compliant with city obligations, with published code from the Coastal Commission, from the city, from the county. We went through 5 rounds of changes on this design to arrive at what we were told would be compliant and conforming. I want to point out that this process is very time and labor intensive. There's been a lot of expressed concern about notice. The 10-day notification period was honored. We have record of the mail going out. I'll demonstrate that the signage was clearly visible for all of the period that it was made available. In fact, the complainant came and moved the sign when she became aware that the sign was available, and that was about 4 or 5 days before the period had closed. And then that period was extended another 7 days as a concession to make sure that anybody who did not have notice had notice. We have had other neighbors come and tell us that they love the project, they're excited for it, and what it's going to do to their property values. We've also had neighbors come and tell us that other neighbors have come canvassing to them, making them aware of this project. So It's clear, I think, from the communication that's going on with the panel that there's no shortage of awareness about the project or having a prior notification and time to be able to place a formal objection, which is why we're here today. I, on the other hand, had 4 days to prepare for this. We received the 12 objection statement Thursday night. I've spent 20 hours preparing to be here today, including the collateral that we put together, because I can't afford to keep missing work and throwing money at this to go through approval process that we've already cleared that's met all of the published regulations. So that's where part of our frustration comes in with this process. And I appreciate your patience. If you don't mind, I'd like to just start the video. So first of all, the sign that you see there is in the exact same location as the original notice. It was relocated by the applicant for the appeal to the other side of the yard. It sat there for about half the duration. This is the second sign, both of which were placed by city. It's directly located next to our mailbox and directly in front of the front door of the house. Thank you. I can either wait or talk you through the printed version that I provided to you, but there are some illustrations in the video that provide a little bit more visual awareness that might be of interest.
Okay, well, if you have something to say. Would the overhead work?
Yeah, I'm going to switch to that right now.
Okay. It's our cutting edge technology here.
This is a story of my life, actually. Sure, so this is just another view of the front of that. It's the same slide. This is in your packet. It's also available in the video that I supplied a link for online. Slightly viewed to the left, just so that you can get some spatial awareness. The house to the left is what I'm referring to as house number three. There's three houses that I refer to in the document that I provided to you. Ours is the house marked with an S. House number one is directly across the street from us. House number two is Ms. Bass, and then house number three are the Burks, who are immediately south of us. This is looking from our front yard over at Ms. Bass' house, and I'll just point out that there is an enormous amount of vegetation in front of the house, which does block, I don't know if it blocks her view to the ocean, but it certainly blocks her view downstream from the house towards our lot. Here's a little bit closer view with windows exposed. So this is just a shot from the frontmost corner of Ms. Bass' property, and you'll see that my house is over to the left, so the rock and the majority of the ocean is visible even from that level. This is important because Ms. Bass' lot, the way the house is structured, it's almost a three-story tall structure. There's about two-thirds of a story, which is driveway, and then there's a first level, which is garage, and then there's a second level where the windows are. And I will demonstrate to you that her view in particular is actually going to shoot over the roofline of the planned structure. So that's important to note that. And as it relates to the technical discrepancy, the staff report indicates that the height of the property is planned at 24 feet and 8 inches. And in fact, if you look at the submitted plans, it's 21 feet and 9 inches, which is in fact shorter than what I've been discussing with Ms. Bast. It was stated to me that it was 23 foot. I took it at face value. We've been having a conversation to that fact. As it turns out, it's 21.9. So the house is almost 4 feet shorter than the limitations that are allowed by city regulation. The other thing I'd like to point out is that, so this is a panorama from Ms. Bast spinning around left. There's the Burke's house, there's a neighbor, and then there's an extremely large two-story house just up the street, immediately within eyeshot of all of us, substantially larger than any of the other houses in the immediate area, and what we're building is not nearly as large as that, but there was a case made that this is not consistent with the neighborhood. Driving up from Quintana up Kings to my house, I counted over 21 houses that were substantially larger visually and in terms of their footprint than what we have proposed. And I think it's really important to point out that if you follow the appealing party's rationale, our right to build relative to the size of the lot should be minimized, devalued, and otherwise discriminated against as compared to the other nearby properties because our lot's the smallest. We're building relative to the size of the lot, so we should be able to work within the limits that have been set by policy. The plan design fits well with under the relative size fit guidelines and is deemed appropriate for the lot size. This is the Burks. This is house number three, and it's just important to understand that they're located to the south of us in order to understand the next set of diagrams that I supplied. So the thing that you're not going to see with the static imagery, but that is supplied in the video, is it's coincidence and convenience that I work for a company that's able to produce artificial reality renderings of things like structures on a lot. We've provided that for you so that you can review and inspect that and see how this lot sits relative to the coastline. And I just want to point out that my sight line has the entire coastline visible over the roof line of my house and the Burks, and that's actually about 10 feet below the eye level of the view shed from the appellant's windows. So in fact, when you get up to that elevation, you're looking well over the roof line to the coastline. I have more information to share, but I don't know if you want me to touch on the rest of it. Or
you had a little technical difficulty. But if you've got a quick conclusion, and then we will have questions for it, we'll bring you back later.
Sure. So the only thing I'll say is that, concerning the tree, the city removed it. It was removed during this planning process, and it didn't make it into the plan because the developer wasn't even aware of it until after we had submitted the plans. It happened around the same window of time. I would have been happy to remove it from the picture, but it's not really relevant to the design. We didn't have any involvement with that. It was a timing thing. The only thing I'll mention is that there are illustrations in the packet for all three of the neighbor houses that I've referred to that helps articulate what the before and after sightline occlusion is going to be. What you'll find is that house number one's not occluded at all. The house of the appealing party is only occluded in the sense that our roof line will be a little bit occluding houses that are further downhill, but it won't be obstructing the coastline or the water line. And house number three, which is the Burks, which are south of us, will lose a little bit of view shed out their side windows, but they will not, and in the illustration, you'll see that they maintain all of their coastline view shed, as well as view shed to the north and east of the property. We block some of the side, and that's, we are not able to avoid that without building, and do this structure, it's impossible.
So okay, thank you
very
much.
Thank you for your time, I appreciate
okay.
it.
Okay. At this point, we'll open it up for further public comment. You'll please come forward, state your name, and you'll have 3 minutes. Can we get some help for the audiovisual here?
Good evening, I'm Cynthia Hawley, here on behalf of the appellant Nancy Bast. Morro Bay allows the planning director to issue administrative development permits only where the issues involved are quote unquote de minimis. This is a legal term that's used in the ordinance. A According to Black's Law Dictionary, a thing is de minimis is a thing that the law does not concern itself with, which makes sense when one person gets to make this decision. So we're talking about projects that have no characteristics that the law is concerned with, and the law in this case is the General Plan Local Coastal Program. That's what administrative permits are for, issuance of permits that are the where the project raises no issue that the law, the general plan, and the local coastal program are concerned with. If a project raises the issue of a general plan local coastal program is concerned with, it is not de minimis, not trivial. The law is concerned with it, and it should get a regular development permit according to the law. The problem is the project here is not de minimis. It raises multiple issues that the law is concerned with. The city's LPC policies through the design guidelines protect visual resources as part of the neighborhood character. They protect neighborhood compatibility concerning style, height, bulk, and for example, reducing the square footage of the second story. And they do protect against privacy intrusions on adjacent residences. And it should be noted that the city's design guidelines are, quote, meant to implement the neighborhood compatibility policies found in the general plan and local coastal plan. That means they are the law. The regular coastal development permit process is also needed to determine whether the The regular coastal development permit process is also needed to determine whether constructing the proposed project will impact the stability of the retaining wall. This wall was probably built in the 1950s. Its structural integrity is unknown. The soil beneath the neighborhood is being shored up by the retaining wall, is sand dune, and subject to shaking. This is a very serious issue, definitely not a trivial issue to be addressed in an administrative permit. Staff says that soil assessments will be done before issuance of a building permit, but determining the possible harmful effects of the project on the retaining wall and the people who live below it, and you can see the house, how close the house is to that retaining wall. It's 10 feet tall. The issue is for an environmental review during the regular permitting process. May I just say two more sentences?
Please conclude, yes.
Okay. If it's one thing we in California have been witnessing on a huge scale are the irrevocable losses that can be caused by improper planning when danger is concerned. We are asking here only for the administrative review process. This is not subject to an administrative review because none of it is de minimis. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, please.
Good evening, commissioners. My name is Roger Ewing. I'm a Morro Bay resident, and I stand before you tonight in support of Nancy Bass's appeal. First, I applaud her, and I thank her for filing the appeal. Otherwise, none of us would ever have heard about this project, a project that is a total demolition and a rebuild of a house twice the size it's replacing, more than twice the size. For it to be approved administratively by one individual without any public input is wrong, in my opinion. A project of this size, of this caliber, deserves to be heard by the public, deserves to be heard by you. You are charged with the ambiance of Morro Bay as far as our construction, our homes, our businesses, etc. This allows none of that, this administrative issuance. The house, in my opinion, is a very good design, a very nice design. It's just out of place in this particular neighborhood, in my opinion. It maximizes its use of a very small lot. It does affect the view of the neighbors. However, it also fits within the box on paper. But when a project is dealt with just the figures on paper, we lose our heart. We lose a part of Morro Bay that makes Morro Bay what it is. And I urge you to uphold Ms. Bast's appeal and require this project to come back to you as a public hearing. Give us all an opportunity to express ourselves in regards to how this will appear in the neighborhood. So I thank you for listening, and I wish you have a good meeting.
Okay, thank you very much. Next, please.
Betty Winholtz. I would like to, I guess, continue some of these arguments in favor of the appeal and maybe to reiterate some of them. I believe that it's your job to deal with soils, to deal with a landscape, which was not addressed, even though in the staff report it says it will be addressed in the resolution, and it was not. And so there are issues here that have not been addressed and that you should and have the right and the responsibility to do. So at the least, it seems to me you would continue this, if not bring it back as a CDP, because you do not have all the information you need to make a safe decision regarding the retaining wall. And there's a retaining wall on both sides of the property. I hope you know that. It's both for the property above them as well as the property below them. So the retaining walls, soils, stability, that all needs to be addressed before a permit is granted. And so if you approve or deny the appeal tonight, then the permit goes through. But there shouldn't be an approval until this information is brought forward. And you guys have a right to hear it and make recommendations. I do want to say one of the things that was an appeal point was that there was no documentation to support staff's claim that everything was honky-dory in terms of the Coastal Act, zoning, and all that kind of stuff. And until Ms. Bass pointed that out in her appeal, then staff now starts supporting those things. So in my opinion, she's already won that point. Okay, so because of her appeal, they've had to produce documentation. That documentation did not exist before. So in that sense, I think she's already won her appeal. But they won't say that because they've changed their presentation to you, okay? But she was the cause of that. I want to speak to the comment about articulation made by Mr. Graham, that the only reason we have setbacks on the second floor is for articulation. My understanding was also to prevent that huge bulk and scale thing that we get with the front wall being straight up and down. That's why we have setbacks on the second floor. It's not just articulation. It's to reduce the bulk size and scale, and this project doesn't have that. So I want to, reinforce what Ms. Bass's original comments were, that you as the, or my interpretation is that you as the Planning Commission are the designers of our planning laws, and that you have the right, and may I say the responsibility, I think, to bring back for your review, for discussion, and for recommendation to the City Council how this process works, administrative permits, as well as the view shed. And I hope that you will agendize those two items.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, commissioners. My name is Grant Crowell. I've lived in Morro Bay since 1999, and I've been coming to Morro Bay since 1963, some 6 years ago. And I know that because I remember seeing Anne Margaret in Bye Bye Birdie at the Bay Theater as a little kid. So I have a lot of memory here. I'm here tonight because this sucks. Totally sucks. I like my neighbors. I like my landlord. I like all of my neighbors. This should never have happened. And I say that because it's funny Nancy talked about that the mansionization project. Well, I led the workshop for the for that, and it was a great success. The participants wanted to know what I thought, and I said, I'm not going to tell you. We're here to find out what you are wanting to tell us. And we did. We listened, and we listened, and we had a full half day of just listening to people of what they wanted. And what they wanted was character maintenance. We came up with a way of doing a 60-40 split. So you had 60% on the ground floor and 40% on the top floor. Those are the setbacks that Betty was just talking about, so that you had space between houses, so that you were, yes, using some of the space, but you were sharing the space. The residents wanted slow but growth. They wanted us to grow slowly so that we didn't totally annihilate the character of this city for the people who have lived here forever and the people who move here. Those yellow signs, that was because of us. They used to have a little 18-inch stick and a 8.5 by 11 piece of paper telling the neighbors what was going to happen. Those yellow signs are because of that workshop. I'm really sad to be here tonight because the city let us down. The city let us down on this. We did a lot of work. There was a whole nother committee formed. We came to the city. They said, we're going to do this. They let us down. Had they not done that, followed the guidelines, we wouldn't be here with this issue tonight. I'm really sad to think how neighbors have to debate one's dreams and desires over another's. They both have dreams and desires. And somebody's going to win and somebody's going to lose. There doesn't seem to be much way of a compromise here. I'm neutral on this because I'm Nancy's tenant and I'm their neighbor. Bad place to be.
Thank you very much. Next, please.
Good evening, Commissioner Lur and, or Chairman Lur and commissioners. I guess you're a commissioner too.
Yeah.
You know, I have a house on Kings. It's near 461 Fairview. And first I'd like to say that I got a notice of the appeal, a yellow card in the mail, but I did not get a notice in the beginning. And I didn't happen to walk on Fairview during the 10-day period, so I didn't know anything about this at the time. And if I had known within the filing period, I probably would have filed an appeal myself, but I didn't get the card. So I do think that there was a notice problem with this. I want to say that initially the square footage doesn't seem overly large for a house. It's not a McMansion. It seems within what people are building these days, and I'm pretty accepting of the fact that we're not going to have small one-story beach houses built in Morro Bay anymore. People just don't do that. But the process, it isn't working because, as a couple of other people said, it always ends up that one person wins and one person loses. One person leaves feeling bad, or a group of neighbors leave feeling bad, or the person who wants to build feels bad and they've spent a ton of money. And it's because we don't have any consideration of a view. I know there are no ordinances that make you look at that. And I know that this house probably checks all the boxes. But it doesn't seem right that it can be administratively approved. And it doesn't seem right that even if something meets all the requirements and looks really good on paper, that it can still come across as being a box. It's not articulated in the roof. It doesn't fit in the neighborhood. The bulk and scope and scale of this house, if you've walked in that neighborhood, you'll see it just doesn't look like anything there. So I don't expect that you can rule on the appeal tonight, but what I'd like to see happen is to gather more information, to recognize that this needs a second look. It needs a third look. And we need to have more time to discuss this because it is a big project that will seriously impact the neighborhood. Thank you for your time. Oh, and I want to say I am concerned about those retaining walls. Thank you.
Okay. Could you please state your name? I'm sorry.
I didn't, did I?
No.
I'm Casey Caldwell and a Morro Bay resident.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next, please.
Good evening. Jamie Irons, resident Morro Bay. I submitted my comments earlier today. I hope you got to read them. Susan, thanks for responding to that. In short, I support the project. It's as has been stated, it does check all the boxes. And that's one of the things that there are many projects that will come before us and processes might not be perfect, but we set up different programs and processes for people to go ahead and go through the work that the Stravoses did. And I would ask that you move the project forward by denying the appeal. And that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Does anybody else wish to speak?
Emily Baranek, Jade Architecture, agent for the applicant.
Could you please pull the mic closer to you?
Yes, sorry.
Okay.
Emily Baranek, agent for the applicant, working with Jade Architecture. I just wanted to draw your attention to the fact that the project checks all the boxes because Chris and Jill wanted to work with the neighborhood. They wanted to fit within the neighborhood. I've been working with staff on this for over a year, and we have made multiple revisions on their recommendation. But also, because Chris and Jill want to be good neighbors, specifically some of the things that we have looked at is the home siding on the lot, both vertically. As you can see here, it is recessed.
Please come back to the mic to speak of that.
I just want to point out that the residence does continue to nestle into the site as the existing home does, that I think probably part of the concern for the contemporary design comes from the fact that trying to stay under that height maximum, but also even lower, if at all possible, was achieved by a flat shed roof as opposed to a standard, more traditional style roof structure. So there is... I just want to point out evidence that Chris and Jill have been trying to be good neighbors and also meet all of the requirements of the design regulations and the city's zoning regulations, which I should also mention, we're here on an appeal to an admin permit because we weren't asking for any changes to zoning, any changes to use. We weren't asking for any exceptions. Again, because we were trying to fit within the requirements and fit within the existing neighborhood. A couple of key points, as I pointed out, the roof slope was kept incredibly low. We have called out specifically a location for future solar, and we are nestled in approximately 3.5 feet below the allowed height intentionally to try to achieve all those things. Thank you for your time.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. Does anybody else wish to speak? Okay.
Am I allowed to?
No, you're not. Okay. You had a shot at it. We may have questions for you, though.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Am I not allowed to respond to the comments that were made?
No, not until we ask you questions. Okay. At this point, I think we'll open it up to questions for the appellant. So, does anybody have any questions
for the appellant,
Nancy Bass,
rather than the applicant?
Right.
I have one more question for the office, for the community.
I'm sorry?
For the community office.
Okay. Or staff.
Yeah.
I'm struck. It's not atypical in any sense to grant a permit and then have the geological studies determine soil, what needs to be done, or am I wrong about that?
No, that's correct. It's a requirement of the building code. The project's conditioned through the building conditions to require a soils report. We added a special condition to have an engineer's evaluation of the wall that everybody keeps bringing up because we realized that needed an evaluation. But that's typically what you do when you submit structural drawings for the house, meaning when you submit for your building permit, that's the package you put together. So, I mean, that's typically the process that's followed. And that's when you'd expect to receive those types of documentation.
Mm-hmm. And it is possible. I suspect it won't happen in this case. It's very unlikely, but it's possible that someone could purchase a house and do plans, and then have a geological study done, and find out that their plans cannot be done because of the quality of the soil. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Typically, what happens is the soils report, you know, leads into how the foundation's designed and how the site's prepped, and whether you're over excavating and bringing in material and recompacting or whatever you're doing. I mean, they'll do the evaluation and it comes out of there and gives you recommendations for prepping the site for the type of design that's proposed.
Jesse, do you have any?
Just one question. I've heard. I think I heard you say that noticing isn't required for this project. Is that correct?
Noticing was required for this project. It's required for all administrative permits.
Noticing with the mailer?
Yes.
And it was or was not?
It was noticed. It went mailed out.
Okay.
So we do notice on admin permits, and we do the same radius notification that we do for regular CDPs, and that's 500 feet. Admin permits don't require us to send out mailing notices unless somebody submitted submitted a request that we notify them on applications. But we do that anyway, and then we posted the site as well. So. And then, based on the appeal, we noticed it. So, yeah.
Susan, do you have any questions?
Yeah, a few. So again, for staff, is this considered a large project because of the demolition and then the rebuild?
This is fairly common. We get these types of things frequently. I mean, sometimes it's not a complete demolition of a house, but we get a lot of these. Most of the projects that come through the city are addition and remodels and those types of things. Some of them are complete teardowns and redos. This is what makes up the bulk of the applications that run through here. Remainder of the Planning Commission, you've seen several of these. It's not uncommon. So.
And I'm new here again. I'm going to be new for a while. That's my fallback. But I feel like the history of the decision to allow administrative approval of projects like this, smaller than three units, was partly to streamline things for folks who did want to do remodels or new builds in the community if it was within the guidelines that had been set. Both by, our various building codes, our former general plan, the new one coming along, neighborhood compatibility stuff. The board has gone over guidelines for residential developments. So given that, was there some kind of decision to say, if they're really fulfilling all those things that we said, we don't need to bring it to Planning Commission to save them time because sometimes those kinds of things put off for months the ability to move forward with a project if it looks like the administrative approval could happen.
I mean, this just falls into the category. It meets all of the development standards. It complies with the, all the setbacks and the height and those types of things. And so there is nothing to trigger a requirement. Like, it doesn't need a conditional use permit because it has something that's nonconforming or one of those things. So it is a staff-level application, a staff-level permit. Our codes fairly old, you know, mm-hmm. going on 30 plus years. And so that process is built into there. Were we required to take every project to Planning Commission? We would never meet Permit Streamlining Act requirements. We don't have enough staff to do that. The backlog would be horrendous. Mm-hmm. You would not be able to get through, you know, a process with the city in any sort of timely fashion. Mm-hmm. Just wouldn't be able to do it.
Okay.
Michael, you have any questions? Okay. I guess I have one for the overarching argument that the LCP or this and local coastal plan and the administrative permit is out of character with the state law.
Sure, I can speak to that. Because the city has a certified local coastal program, it handles these kinds of applications in line with its own municipal code. And this is straightforwardly follows section 17.58.040 of the city's municipal code.
Okay, and so for the last 30, 35 years that we've been doing this, this has been legal?
Yes.
Okay, just wanted to double check. All right. I guess we don't have any questions for the appellate or for the applicant. Then we can close public comment and move to discussion. You guys comfortable with that? Okay. Who wants to go first? Okay.
I think there's one large issue, which is the appeal, and I think it spins off the process and the design issues as secondary. And the first thing I wanted to say is about the soils is soils isn't a granting of any right. The soils is an obligation. At this point, the developer has risked the idea of developing this until the soils come back. Soils could come back, and they've got $500,000 in retaining wall work to do. There's not a right to build this. There's an obligation to investigate. And so I've seen many projects back east because of soil conditions change, and I don't know that this one would, but, you know, that's why you have structural engineers with licenses who have friends that are lawyers, you know, because things happen. It is an old dune, but that doesn't mean it's sand. The thing that's most concerning is the nature of it, if it's expansive clay. And when you open up the ground and change the ability of water to get in there, what's going on? But the geotechnical report will tell you that. And having had paid for a geotechnical report for a 10 by 10 study on my house, I can tell you those are neither inexpensive nor or structural things around here cheap. They're very expensive. So the soils part doesn't bother me at all. The design, I think, is exceptional. I think the design is really great. I don't think the materials that are this I think is fine. I don't think the materials that were shown earlier with the insertion are correct. But I do think what they show is that, you know, the facade of the building is modeled on the Fairview side, and the side that's uphill to the south facing the east goes out pretty much to the build line, and then the entrance is recessed distinctively back, and then the garage steps out but does not go as far as the piece in front. So if it had been brought forward with our design guidelines, I would have said, well, I think they've done a pretty reasonable job. I think the materials mix is good, and I think we're going to see changes to the way Morro Bay looked, and I think this is I'm happy with what I'm seeing here. The process does concern me. Not the process with this particular one, but I think this type of issue, the issues Ms. Hawley raised, I think, and I go back to when we looked at our documents that are still in preparation and draft form. I'm a fan of having specific area zone issues show up. And this is an area that I would say needs something over top of it that says when you build a second floor, it gets brought in for review. And not because of the scale, but because of the second floor. The person uphill has a garage and a floor above it. The appellant has a garage and a floor above it. These people are building a garage with a floor above it. So I don't think they're getting anything unique. They have a small lot. I think they've done a reasonable job. But I do think going forward, it is, I'm very concerned, I'm very sensitive to what Ms. Bass said about the paying for an appeal on a house that is a second floor in an area of view corridor issues. And because our guidelines specifically talk about those things, like I said, my own particular opinion on this, I think it would meet our guidelines, but I think anybody should be aware that something that would be coming into a second floor should be going through a process that gets this larger review. I guess one small point is I'm very concerned we didn't see a three-dimensional view. I'm very concerned the residents didn't get a chance to see a three-dimensional view. It's very hard to read these documents, you know, and some of us have more professional background in reading them, and I still don't trust myself until I see the three-dimensional rendering. So I think it's paramount that when we have certain areas of town, North Morro Bay is different than the center part, was different than the downtown, is different than this section. But this particular section, because we have so much stereotomic aspects of the landscape changing as you move around, a house may not fit here that fits very well somewhere else. We see some of our architects coming in from other parts of the state. It's obvious they're coming from other parts of the state. They don't understand what we have here. And we've seen some of those things come forward. But I think this one does appear to be doing some wonderful things. I'm not a fan of the pool, but that's...
Okay, Susan?
So I'm interested in your comments about bringing second floor projects in for review, partly because in our guidelines we don't have view protection. So we do have issues about compatibility and height relationships, and if it's a whole neighborhood of one-story buildings, not throwing a massive two-story building in there. But this does have this variety. If you walk around the blocks, you see pretty evenly balanced one and two stories. So I think it could be an interesting thing to bring in a requirement for the review when there's a second story, but since we don't protect private views according to our guidelines, I sort of wonder how that fits. Totally agree with the issue of satisfying the retaining wall issues and soils. I've used to work in construction and saw a whole lot of that kind of stuff coming up, and it is expensive and it is time consuming, and you know, I'd be hopeful for the applicants that they don't face some of the really ugly stuff that comes along with that, but it is in the requirements. So that concern, which I think is well voiced by the neighbors, I think that will be met, and I think it's required to be met. So that part doesn't concern me. I agree. I actually surprised myself by really liking this plan. I tend to be a traditionalist, old-fashioned kind of girl, but as I walked the neighborhood and looked at what other homes have, there are elements from this in parts of other homes, or the railings they're using, or the siding they're using, or the flat and slightly sloped roofs all throughout the neighborhood, from all sorts of different architectural styles and time periods. So I was interested to kind of look at it and see that it could fit. And again, it's modern, a little bit industrial, and that reflects some of our heritage as a city as well. So... I was really pleased to see in our packet the letters that you folks exchanged with each other that were really quite civil, really heartfelt. You know, in the long run, we just want to see that kind of communication. If maybe this board needs to be the venue for that communication, maybe we do need to consider that. But I was pleased to see that. So thanks.
Jesse.
Yeah, thanks. So it occurred to me that, first of all, I just want to say I think the architect did a wonderful job. It's a beautiful design. Having visited the site, I do think the house will stand out, but for the right reasons. I think it's going to be a highlight of that neighborhood. I think you're going to come around the corner and see it, and it's going to stand out, and it's going to be beautiful. That's my hope, if it looks anything like the rendering. So good job. So I believe, well, let me back up a little bit. So I agree with Ms. Bast on one thing, in that the fee schedule, I'm wondering if maybe there is some latitude for the city council to waive some of these appeal fees. So maybe Scott can look into that in the future to see if, you know, if there's any latitude there for the city council to do that. I think the process worked perfectly. I think that Scott was well within his rights, both as the community development director. He's in charge of planning and building. And I think he did exactly what he was supposed to do. And I think the appeal process did exactly what it was supposed to do, which is stimulate this dialogue and get us all talking about it. So I wouldn't want to see an additional review on second story projects, but I would like to see more of a, well, I wouldn't want to see it, but I would like to encourage appeals, if warranted, you know, exactly like we did in this process. So I think the appeal process exists to do exactly what Commissioner Lucas was hoping we would do, I think. The retaining wall, so it occurred to me, I was looking at it yesterday when I was there, and it was, you know, stated that it was built in the 50s, and, you know, being in construction for a couple decades now, so if it's been there 60 years, maybe it's okay, you know. That's just my common sense approach to it, you know. Maybe not. You know, maybe we put a big old giant pool there. It might need some remediation. Maybe not. But that's my common sense approach to that. But and like I was explaining to Ms. Bast yesterday, you know, the building planning dichotomy. So as Scott, as the community development director, wears both hats, but the planner is going to say, yes, you can do it. Then the building department is going to say, here's how you have to do it. So we have to get past the planning process first before we can allow the builders to do what they do. So obviously, due diligence will be paid to both the soils, the retaining wall, the structural. Being in the field, it is not an inexpensive endeavor. It is going to be rather a tough build, I think. But you know, kudos to them for trying. If I did have one comment on the design, in looking from the, make sure I get the neighbors to the south. So as that single story with the garage beneath them, or however we're classifying that, my concern for them would be the reflectivity of a roof and the reflectivity of a possible solar system. I have seen that be problematic in the past, and if we can do anything to maybe alleviate, I mean, we can't protect their view corridor, but maybe we can protect them from getting, you know, I see that the roof shouldn't do that, but let's look at making sure that the solar system doesn't do that either. So if we can do that, Scott, I would think that'd be a good thing, and that's all I have. So,
Richard,
let's see. With respect to the appeal fee, I really think that's too high. It's prohibitive, and it's at 250. It's designed to discourage people. I think that should be changed. I think we should recommend that to the city council. Also, the 10 day period is, I think, much too short to do anything kind of like a comprehensive, persuasive memorandum. That it should be at least 30 days. To the substance of this, you know, at center is what this board is trying to decide, whether this design is compatible with the neighborhood in which it's going to be sited. And to that extent, numerous 3D renderings are absolutely essential. This is a poster boy for where we should have these kinds of renderings. You know, I've said that before, but I think we need to do something with putting a little bit of teeth into that requirement. This is clearly a difficult case. It's a close one, I think, because the house is a large house, but not unreasonably large. The lot is small, but not unreasonably small. It's modern architecture, which tends to be somewhat boxy and austere and hard-edged, but they've made numerous concessions in terms of breaking up the massing and different materials on the facade. So you have to sort of balance those things. And I think the designer, tasked as they were with building or designing a house with four bedrooms and a living room and a dining room and closet space and entryway and room for a pool and all that, has done an excellent job of meeting all those demands, in addition to designing a house that's compatible with our guidelines in terms of breaking up mass and indentations. But it is a question of, was the designer asked to do too much? And I'll return to that in a second. With respect to the development office, here's sort of an aside. The development office does an excellent job, and I can speak to that from experience. And so we have to be very careful in any way, should we overturn a decision of the development office, we have to be very careful because we don't want to create even the slightest impression or suspicion that such things are necessary on any kind of a basis, or because it really isn't. They do an excellent job. I want to return to one thought that's really been pestering me, and I'm going to return to this notion of the second story limitations in the proposed zoning code. Now, clearly, the development office is not in the business of applying or enforcing proposals. They're in the business of enforcing and applying what's city law. But we, I don't think, have the same constraint, because those proposals came to us, and we recommended that they would be accepted by the city council, and I believe that they're still working on them. And in particular, this 1705040, which talks about limiting the amount of structure on a second story, and they have several formulas here. We, as its board, I believe, decided that that was a better approach than what is currently in the zoning code, that it's more specific, less subject to subjectivity, and will thoroughly make our job easier. So I believe, and the fact that the city council hasn't approved it yet is largely irrelevant to this board, because we've already expressed our opinion. And if you look at the requirement of that proposal, I'll read it for you, so some of you may not be familiar. But again, currently this only addresses lots that are 5,000 square feet or more. But the logic of that is clearly not to say that for lots that are less than 5,000, these restrictions shouldn't apply. That would make no sense at all. The common sense approach is that for lots that are less than 5,000, we have to look more clearly, because the constraints of a smaller lot might make some of these black ink laws inappropriate, okay? So a two-story structure shall meet one of the following conditions. Well, actually, there are several provisions. A minimum of 60% of the second story front elevation shall be set back a minimum of 3 feet from the first floor wall. Or B, two-story structures shall meet one of the following conditions. The floor area of the second level shall not exceed 75% of the first level, and the front and side elevations shall not be single solid planes. Or a minimum of 25% of each building elevation shall be set back at least 3 feet from the remaining area of the elevation plan. Now, I believe that this design does not meet any of those choices, but admittedly, this is only a proposal. But we have, in previous meetings, said we think this is a very good idea. Now, it strikes me that the design could be modified to meet those, albeit And again, I have no architectural training at all, but I could see a design in which the living room and den were combined, or I could see where perhaps the office and a bedroom were omitted, or I could see a design in which there was not additional room left for the pool, so that the building could essentially be spread out a little bit and reduced in the second story and entered a little bit more to make it coincide with our proposed zoning law with respect to design guidelines. So that's what I'd like to see, because as good as this design is, and it is a good design in and of itself, but I think it could be improved as it sits on the lot. It might require a slightly smaller home. I'm not sure. I will leave that to design professionals. And again, I would really need to see some sort of 3D rendering to see what this house is going to look like. Those are my comments.
Okay. I'll take issue with one of your points. The reason that we restricted that to 5,000 square feet or larger lot sizes was because that on the smaller lot sizes, you don't have enough room to create a larger bottom floor and a smaller upper floor. So the logic was that with a larger lot, you could expand the ground floor and then reduce the upper floor so you could get those setbacks. With a smaller lot, you're much more constricted because you also have to have two covered parking spots. So there was a fallacy in your thinking there on why we proposed that on keeping the restriction at 5,000 square feet and larger. Now, smaller lots require more of jewel box houses so that and things are tighter because you still have to have minimum standards for stairways and parking, and we still have lot coverages that we have to deal with. So that was why we restricted the second floor reduction to 5,000 square foot lots and larger. So that was the thinking that we had. Sure.
Well, that may be an additional thought, but the suggestion, I'll throw out a number. Perhaps an 18 or 1900 square foot house could be built on that lot with conforming to the proposed guidelines, albeit it might lack a room or two. But you're not telling me that that's impossible, are you?
No, I'm not telling you that's impossible, but what I'm also saying is, you know, the case is this: the house and the conditions we have with this now, and the rules that their design was put under is what we should be operating at this point. If further restrictions come on, then we can apply those in the future. I think.
See, but I disagree because we,
okay,
as a body, we've already decided that all things being equal, we would like these second-story limitations to be in place, all things being equal.
But we're an advisory board. We do not have the power to create regulations.
No,
we advise, and then when those regulations are put into effect, that's what we apply to the individual projects.
No, you're absolutely right. And I'm not suggesting that we apply a guideline that is still a proposal, but what I am suggesting...
Yeah, that was what you did suggest.
No. Yeah. What I'm suggesting is... this proposal is what we have agreed is a necessary guideline for this body. This is making explicit and articulating what we would like houses in the neighborhood to look like. And now it hasn't been solidified into a city ordinance yet, but clearly I think our opinion is that this is what we would like. And when we say a house is appropriate or inappropriate for a given neighborhood, we are in effect saying it doesn't meet that guideline.
Okay. I fall back on the position that we have before us a proposal that was created under a certain set of rules that are in effect now. And those are the certain set of rules that we need to apply to this proposal. In future projects, if our recommendations are approved by the appropriate bodies, then we can then apply those regulations and those recommendations to the projects that come in that were created under those guidelines. So that's part of what I see going here. And to me, once again, I think that they took the appropriate design guidelines. They took the appropriate lot coverages. They came in 3 feet 9 inches below their maximum height limitations. And I think they hit the they checked all the boxes that we asked them to check for this project at this time. So, you know, we do not, okay, once again, you know, I'll go off onto the private view protection. We do not protect private views in this city primarily because it gives primacy to lot owners simply because they built first. So, I think the project, you know, although I wish, you know, there could be some changes to it, but I think it hits the boxes, and I think it's approvable, and I think staff did the appropriate job in approving it, both, you know, administratively, because they came in, they followed the rules. These were the rules. They followed the design guidelines. These were the design guidelines that are in effect now as the regulation. So that is where I see this project coming forward. The only place that I would see where there could have been improvements on this, probably not the only place, but probably the largest place, was on the north side adjacency and the height limitation with the single floor residence that's next to it. But that's a minor, you know, a minor comment to it. So I think we've had our comments. Is there, does somebody wish to put forward a motion?
One last question or concern.
Okay.
That some people did not receive the postcard. I know that they're little. I've gotten one for something that's number of them that are for things that are happening in my neighborhood, but were there other neighbors that did get the postcards that, I mean, that?
So that's a question for staff.
We mailed the postcards out. I can't speak to, you know, what happened or why some of the folks didn't get them. It's why we for projects post the site as well, in case one of the methods doesn't work. And then, you know, when it goes to the Planning Commission, then it also ends up in the paper. And people can sign up for Notify Me, and they can get notices of Planning Commission meetings and things that are on there as well. So there's multiple venues to figure that out. I think the system is not perfect,
sure.
You know. But
yeah.
And so I did hear that from Ms. Bast, that she thought that a number of the neighbors didn't get the notice. And I can't speak to, you know, what happened after we gave them to the post office. That's kind of where our job stops. I know we provided them and mailed them and paid postage on them. I can't speak to what happened to them after that.
Okay.
Thanks.
Richard?
And I want to repeat again that I think the development office was absolutely correct in their decision. I have no objection to that at all. But I posit a situation where this property on a 5,000 square foot lot or more, I would be hard-pressed to think that this board would say this house is this design is the design we want, because they would inevitably look to this proposal, which addresses houses on a 5,000-square-foot lot or more, and say, this is what we want, not that. And this is synonymous with our adjudication of what's neighborhood compatibility, notwithstanding that it's only a proposal. And the fact that it's less than 5,000 square feet only means we have to look a little more closely at it, not that somehow it gets a pass from consideration of these limitations.
Okay, well, that's your opinion.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, it seemed like we kind of came to a consensus. Do we have a motion?
I'll attempt a motion here. I would like to move that we deny the appeal and uphold the director's approval of coastal administrative coastal development permit CDP 18-009 at 461 Fairview for the demolition of the existing 922 square foot residence and the construction of a new two-story 2203 square foot single-family residence.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Sorry, I just want to clarify, does the motion include the adoption of the resolution?
The motion includes the adoption of the resolution.
Okay. Do we have discussion on the motion? Okay. Let's call the question then.
Okay. Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Stewart?
Aye.
Commissioner Barone?
Aye.
Commissioner Ingrafia?
No.
Chairperson Lohr?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-1.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, everybody. Okay. I'd like to just, Scott, if I may, I'd like to just ask a couple questions on this that I didn't think were appropriate for the hearing, but why was there no landscape plan, and why was there no three-dimensional representations and presentations on this?
Landscape plans aren't required, and
I thought they're required for our on our.
They're required in the new code. They don't have a landscape plan requirement for existing for single family homes in the.
Okay, on the design code. Guidelines, we didn't require it.
They, I have to look. I don't recall off the top of my head.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to look. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I thought about that.
And I may be wrong on that, too, because we've gone through. That's something you can get back to me on. I was just curious. Okay. At this point, we'll move on to new business. We have none. Unfinished business, we have none. Planning commissioners' comments and future agenda items.
Do you have a comment?
Okay, go.
Just a comment here. I probably should have did it during planning commissioner announcements, but just for everybody's information, the April WRF CAC meeting was canceled because the hydrology study and the facility review were not complete, and they are expected to be complete by the end of this month and for review and for a May WRF CAC meeting. So if you're interested, please keep an eye on the city website, and we will, I'm sure, have information to that effect towards the end of the month.
Okay. Good. Okay. Community directors?
I don't have any comments.
Development director? Okay. And then at this point, we'll adjourn the meeting to the next regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting at the Veterans Memorial Building, 209 Surf Street, on April 16th, 2019 at 6 p.m. Okay, thank you very much.